Corey is Aboriginal in New South Wales, which represents me and my community. I recall dabbling into mum's frocks when I was about 5, 6 or 7. Yeah. And I knew there was something underlying, but I just didn't know exactly what it was. Welcome to Country is to welcome people onto our country, yeah, and wish them safety, wish them well on their stay, and wish them safety on their journeys back home to their home.
1, 2, 3,
Pride!
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The World Bank yanks funding from anti-queer Uganda. Iraq could force sexuality and gender language back into the closet. And a Koori drag queen fights for her nation. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm Marcos Najera.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 12, 2023. Uganda is paying a price for its Anti-Homosexuality Act 2023. The World Bank announced on August 8th that it's pausing all new loans to the country. Global human rights groups label the latest version of the law deeply repressive. And the bank expressed its position in a press statement that reads, "We believe our vision to eradicate poverty on a livable planet can only succeed if it includes everyone, irrespective of race, gender, or sexuality. This law undermines those efforts. Inclusion and non-discrimination sit at the heart of our work around the world." Uganda's High Court struck down the 2014 iteration of its Kill the Gays law on a legal technicality. This year's version, again, punishes aggravated homosexuality with execution. Entrenched autocratic president Yoweri Museveni signed the draconian measure in May. In response to the World Bank's sanctions, Museveni insisted Uganda will develop with or without loans. The East African nation's foreign affairs minister, Okello Oryem, complained to Reuters that no similar actions have been taken against several Middle Eastern and Asian countries with equally harsh anti-queer laws. However, other government officials admit privately that the loss of development funding could have a significant impact. Queer Ugandan activist Frank Mugisha applauded the World Bank action. He called on his country's high court to repeat history and overturn the current version of the Kill the Gays law.
Iraq will become the don't say homosexual, homosexuality, or gender country if the Communications and Media Commission has its way. The agency is confining all media outlets and social media platforms to the use of one term only, sexual deviance. Phone and internet companies licensed under the commission would be required to stop saying homosexual, homosexuality, or gender on their mobile apps due to the negative connotations of these terms in Iraqi society. Human rights groups like Amnesty International call the move the latest in a series of attacks on freedom of expression under the guise of respect for public morals. The commission's directive has not yet been greenlighted by the government. No specific penalties have been announced, although significant fines are likely to be attached. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is technically not against the law in Iraq, but violence and discrimination against LGBTQ people is commonplace in the socially conservative, primarily Muslim West Asian nation. A bill to officially criminalize homosexual acts was introduced in Parliament last month.
Malaysia's Home Ministry has banned all products by Swiss watchmaker Swatch that include rainbow colors or any overt or covert LGBTQ elements to ensure public safety and peace. The ministry calls the timepieces possibly detrimental to morality, public interest, and national interest by promoting, supporting, and normalizing the LGBTQ movement, which is not accepted by the general public of Malaysia. Same-gender sex is against the law there and punished by up to 20 years in prison. Anyone found wearing or simply in possession of those watches or their packaging could spend up to 3 years in prison or fined the equivalent of about $4,400. The government raided Swatch watch shops across Malaysia in May and seized hundreds of suspect products. That prompted a lawsuit by Swatch demanding the return of hundreds of confiscated watches and other items that the suit says have no connection to LGBTQ activism. The attack on what are perceived to be queer-supportive Swatch watches is just the latest example of increasing anti-LGBTQ repression in the Muslim-majority Southeast Asian nation. The government recently shut down a Good Vibes music festival in Kuala Lumpur after British rocker Matty Healy of the 1975 railed against the laws on stage and defiantly kissed the band's male bassist. Swatch Group chief executive Nick Hayek wonders how peace and love could be harmful. He asked Al Jazeera whether government officials would try to ban rainbows in the sky.
China's government has no love for the rainbow either, especially in this chart-topping song out of Taiwan. That's A Mei Yi performing her hit song Rainbow in concert, but not in Beijing, where it was directly forbidden. The artist and queer ally says that she specifically wrote the song for her LGBTQ fans. They frequently wear rainbow attire and wave rainbow flags at her concerts in anticipation of hearing what has become a queer rights anthem in Taiwan. But security officials ordered concertgoers to her gigs at Beijing's Cadillac Center to remove their colorful clothes and trash their rainbow flags and paraphernalia before entering the venue. China officially decriminalized same-gender sex in 1997 and removed it from psychiatric diagnostic manuals in 2001. However, President Xi Jinping has led a far more hostile government since he became Communist Party leader in 2013. Singapore authorities did allow A Mei Yi to perform Rainbow at her July concerts there, but according to Asia One News, attendees' rainbow flags were confiscated.
You knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in.
Another judicial appointment of the disgraced and indicted former U.S. president has come back to bite progressive legal precedent. Trump appointed Texas federal district judge Brantley Starr has ordered lawyers for Southwest Airlines to take religious liberty training from an organization identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-queer hate group. Judge Starr calls the Alliance Defending Freedom an esteemed nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving free speech and religious freedom. He failed to acknowledge that the ADL is a leading legal foe of LGBTQ and women's rights. Starr's directive comes in the case of Southwest Airlines flight attendant Charlene Carter. Carter successfully won a federal discrimination lawsuit against the company and the union in 2021 after she was allegedly fired for expressing her pro-life belief to her union president. Along with ordering Carter's reinstatement, Starr told the company and union to inform Southwest flight attendants that, under Title VII, they may not discriminate against Southwest flight attendants for their religious practices and beliefs, including, but not limited to, those expressed on social media and those concerning abortion. Southwest changed the words may not discriminate to does not discriminate, and Starr considered that a breach of his order. The judge cited both the Lord of the Bible and the Lord of the Rings in commanding Southwest lawyers to take at least 8 hours of religious liberty instruction from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Spokespeople for the ADF were surprised to be named in Starr's order, since they were not involved in the flight attendant's lawsuit. They certainly welcomed the chance to provide what they called training on applicable laws barring religious discrimination. Both the company and the union have appealed the judge's original ruling and say they'll also appeal his latest sanctions. The training is to be completed no later than August 28th.
Finally, the rural Oklahoma town of Prague celebrated its first LGBTQ pride on August 5th. Oklahoma City area public radio station KGOU had a reporter on scene to capture the festivities, which drew about 30 of the town's 2,500 people to Prague Park.
I really wanted there to be something closer to home where I live here in Prague.
Rebecca LaFollette was one of the local organizers.
And we've gotten a lot of, you know, backlash, some death threats, some people saying that if we hosted a pride here, you know, we wouldn't be leaving alive.
Brian Paddock and Jacob Jeffrey have led the group Rural Oklahoma Pride for the past 2 years. They helped to bring their latest event to Prague and joined LaFollette in the celebration.
We both come from smaller communities, and in our smaller communities, we don't have the support for the LGBTQIA communities. We hear you.
We see you. We love you. And know you're never alone.
We're here. We're queer. We're not going anywhere.
1, 3, scream pride. 1, 2, 3,
pride!
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 12, 2023. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ada Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
G'day, you mob. I'm Nova Gina, one of Australia's most fabulous Aboriginal drag queens, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give us online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
White colonialism and the attempted eradication of Black and Indigenous people of color's culture has repeated itself around the world for centuries. In the part of the land down under known as Ku-ring-gai, the Aboriginal legacy is well represented by the drag alter ego of Graham Sims. Her performance and political namesake is Greece's Europop icon Ioana Nana Mouskouri. She talks about her art and activism with This Way Out correspondent Barry Mackay in Sydney.
Hello, Nana Mouskouri. You're one of Australia's foremost up-and-coming First Nations drag queens. Can you explain to an international audience the meaning behind your drag name?
Well, hello. Welcome onto Gadigal country, where we're doing the live recording. It is the fabulous Nana Mouskouri. My name eventuated from the glorious Nana Mouskouri, the Greek artist. Yeah. And I was...
Who's internationally known.
Who's very well known. I think she's about 85, 86 now. Mm. I wanted to incorporate her name, meaning to do with mine, as Nana Mouskouri. And for the audience that do not know, Koori is Aboriginal in New South Wales, which represents me and my community.
So Aboriginals from most of New South Wales would call themselves a Koori.
Koori, K-O-O-R-I.
And also in Victoria too, I believe, the state of Victoria.
Correct.
Yeah.
And different states have different meaning for their culture.
Like in Queensland, they've got a different name too.
In Queensland, they're known as Murray.
Yeah.
In Western Australia, it's Noongar.
Noongar, yeah.
Yeah. And there's some in northern parts of New South Wales that are also as Murray. I was born here on Gadigal country, Crown Street Women's Hospital.
Here in Sydney.
Here in Sydney.
Yep.
Between Gadigal country here in around Darlinghurst, Surry Hills. Bidjigal country at La Perouse. I have bloodline connection through to there. And also down, my lineage goes down to Yuin country, where I grew up for 27 years, part of my life.
Which is the New South Wales south coast.
South coast of Sydney. It's about 2.5 hours south of Sydney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you live on an Aboriginal reserve for a while there?
Yes. Yeah, so many, many years ago with the churches, you know, government, they put, what would you say, reserves.
Yeah, because we had pretty draconian system for separation of Aboriginal people for many years.
So they actually separated us pretty much from the wider community today, known today as missions or reserves, which are managed by the churches with ministers and so forth like that. And it's the missions still exist today.
Mm. Do you have happy memories in your childhood of growing up on that mission or that reserve? Or was it pretty restrictive?
Well, I think in 1974, my grandparents moved my family off the mission through the fact that the Department of Housing wanted to give or offer people off the missions a better lifestyle. And my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, took that opportunity on. So he gave my mother and her siblings the better opportunity to get to hospital, for health means, for education, for employment. And that pretty much took us that way, where it was closer off the missions into city style, lifestyle.
What fascinated you first about getting into drag, and how old were you?
I recall dabbling into mum's frocks when I was about 5, 6 or 7. Yeah. I recall I'd lock myself into my mother's bedroom, the old housing commission, where I'd get a bread and butter knife and put it in the door for my security and safety. And my mother knew what I was doing. However, my elder male sibling, my younger brother, you know, male sibling, that they used to make fun of me and stuff like that. Yeah, so 5, 6 or 7, and I knew there was something underlying, but I just didn't know exactly what it was.
Was there much opportunity at first in Sydney as a First Nations person to do public drag performances?
The only time that came from was from our social support group, where we went from a social support group called Black Pearls. I recall, I think it was 2009, I did a performance at the Lord Raglan Hotel on Henderson Street.
Is that in Redfern?
Yeah, just at the bottom of Redfern.
So Redfern, for international listeners, is the traditional area where a lot of Aboriginal people live.
Yeah, very well known of the block.
Of Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, very well known of the block. It was a meeting place where everybody come from all over, over New South Wales, even outside of New South Wales, to come and meet people, their family, on the block themselves. So it was always Redfern, very, very well known of the meeting place. It was like what I would call a corroboree, where people would come together in song, dance, and meet in person and just gather and support one another.
What sort of venues do you perform at now?
Well, it's more because I've been performing for quite some time now. I used to do quite regularly at the Imperial Hotel, the very iconic Imperial Hotel. However, that changes hands. You know, they have different people come in, events managers and stuff like that. So it's been probably about 4 or 5 years since I've actually been back there. However, things have really got busy for me, I should say.
And you've been really promoted this year with World Pride, haven't you?
I believe I have been, Barry.
Tell me about that.
I believe my nephew was at Sydney Airport, Sydney International Airport. It sends me a little text message, says, "Hey, Unc, do you know that you're on the billboard here in at the international airport?"
There's a big picture of you in full drag doing like a promo.
Yes, I've done a lot of work with ACON, Age Council of New South Wales.
Yep.
You know, I've just been busy promoting organisations, promoting First Nations people, which I'm a big advocate for, our mob.
Which is good.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a pioneer in regards with that.
That's great.
And I have been involved with the ABC.
Excellent.
I did a recording.
That's the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
Correct, yes, yeah. Where I've actually done a little bit of work. This week I did some recordings for Welcome to Country for Mardi Gras for this year. As a Gadigal community elder, it is my role to welcome you all onto Gadigal country. My name is Nanamis Khoury, Redfern's very own First Nations drag queen. I pay my respect to our pioneers, people that have paved the way for me. First Nations people are not just the oldest living culture in Australia. We are the oldest continuous living culture in the world. And that is something for each and every one of us to be proud of. I welcome each and every one of you onto Gadigal country. I wish you safety on your stay, and I wish you happiness on your journeys home. I would like to welcome you back to Oxford Street for Mardi Gras' 45th anniversary. Happy Mardi Gras!
And they're pretty gay friendly, aren't they?
Very gay friendly.
Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
A couple of sexy ones in there, I must say, if I can.
Can you explain to an international audience what Welcome to Country is and why it's so important?
Well, Welcome to Country, Barry, is it's protocol for our people. And it's about, you know, traditional people like myself, a Gadigal person, can only do a Welcome to Country. So I've been involved to do the last four or five Welcome to Country.
So the Gadigal lands would be the area around metropolitan Sydney?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And then you've got, because of COVID the last few years, Mardi Gras still went ahead, but it was on the lands of the Bidjigal people, which is also my lineage.
Yeah.
So I was within my lineage right to be able to do Welcome to Country.
Okay.
Now it's coming back onto Oxford Street, which is on Gadigal country.
Okay.
So I'm within my right. But a Welcome to Country is to welcome people onto our country and wish them safety, wish them well on their stay, and wish them safety on their journeys back home to their home.
So traditionally, what did that mean if before colonisation, if somebody from another Aboriginal group wanted to pass through or enter into another
person's country?
What was the protocol there?
So protocol is that they have to seek permission from that actual country through traditional owners before they actually come through. And I spruik that, but I say that, I actually do say that in my welcomes to make sure that protocol is still being adhered to.
Yeah.
A lot of people do not. I've still seen people here in attendance at Fair Day that as a traditional owner, they have not come through to me. And I'm not the only traditional owner here on Gadigal country. However, and it's a reminder to people out there that it is protocol. So people do not know their own cultural protocol. Go back to your elders and find out what exactly it is. Or come and see me.
Now, how's your career taking off now that you've had such a lot of media exposure?
Oh, look, I think it all happened after my separation from my ex about, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of my, how would you say, he was also a drag queen.
Yeah.
I supported him, and my drag actually, how would you say, it was put to sleep, so to speak. And then after my separation, like, the world's been my oyster. I've performed 2.5 years ago. I was at Newry, Northern Ireland, as a Gadigal representative, a First Nations
and
representative.
And that was for the World Pride bid, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So I was there for World Pride bid.
Yeah.
And then in October of 2019, we were there for the AGM, where, you know, Nana performed. Where she performed, she was a spokesperson for Gadigal people, to let people know exactly what's happening to our mob here.
Yep.
Not just on Gadigal country, but certainly, you know, to our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here in Australia, through the fact that there's a very high death rate of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander deaths in custody.
Mm.
Stolen generation. I worked in child protection. That was a big part of the stolen generation in the early 70s.
Intergenerational trauma as well.
Yes, and it's still happening today. Yeah. However, I worked in for community services.
Yeah.
I was a child protection caseworker.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was about 11 years ago that I finished up with them. But they just worded differently. The high rates of children being removed into outer home care is disgusting.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, I'm getting a little bit older, but it doesn't stop me. You know, it just determines me.
Mm.
And I'm a proud Gadigal, Bidjigal, Yuin, with Darug lineage, to be able to represent my people in frock or as Graham. But I'd certainly like to pay homage to my elders, my pioneers, that have paved the way for me to be able to do what I'm doing. Certainly for the 78ers, you know, it means a lot to me. However, it's the hard work that we put in, but be grateful and never forget our warriors that have passed, that have actually made our pathway a little bit easier.
With thanks to Nana Miskouri, this is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was recorded this week by Ava Davis and Marcos Nahara and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Barry Mackay. Amea, ABBA, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and Midnight Oil performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson, composer, performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. We hope you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KPOV Bend, Oregon, WELT Fort Wayne, Indiana, 2NCR South Lismore, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.